And welcome to No Filler, the music podcast dedicated to sharing the often overlooked hidden gems that fill the space between the singles on our favorite records. My name is Travis, got my brother Quentin here as always. And Q, I almost hung it up, dude, over the weekend. I was so pumped. I was like, you know what? I could quit right now while I'm ahead.
You almost threw in the towel.
Yeah, because I was like, you know, I've peaked. Like, there's nothing else for me to do here. If you follow us on Twitter, it's at No Filler Podcast. You may have noticed that one of my tweets, Q, was retweeted by the artist himself.
Who are you talking about? Like, I don't already know.
Comtruz retweeted my post about him. Beel, 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 beel. So if you're listening to our last couple episodes, we covered Comtruz, the synthwave artist, and his debut EP, Cyanide Sisters. There, I said it correctly. This is where I said, you know what? I have to keep doing this because I fucked up so poorly.
I still can't believe you did this, dude. I don't understand how this could have happened.
So my moment when I realized that he retweeted me, the joy that I had was immediately dashed when somebody else, you know, because I started getting a bunch of notifications on my phone. Somebody commented and said, cyanide and happiness, lol. And that's because that's what I had a typo in my tweet.
Yeah.
So Cyanide and Happiness is a webcomic that I'm a fan of.
I think everyone's familiar with Cyanide and Happiness.
Yeah. Yeah. And the guys are actually based out of Richardson. I know I'm friends with somebody who's friends with them. I'll just say that. Anyway. So I guess when I was typing out cyanide, like typically that word is paired with and happiness in my brain. So like instead of typing out Cyanide Sisters, I typed out Cyanide and Happiness and tweeted it and didn't even think about it. And you can't edit a tweet, unfortunately. Anyway, I'm not going to let that get me down, Q. It was obviously a mistake. And I, you know, the guy called it out. I laughed about it with him. I, you know, mentioned Explosum, which is the company that they make the Cyanide and Happiness comic. So I did the best I could with it. But still, pretty embarrassing, you know. We get a tweet that's retweeted by the artist, which means he read that. And clearly, he saw the mistake, but he didn't do anything.
Probably thought it was hilarious, dude.
Probably.
You know, at least he's got a sense of humor about it.
Yeah. Either way, you know what? Here's a good thing, dude. Here's what got me excited. If Comtruz retweeted the tweet, there's a chance that he listened to our episode. And that got me super stoked, man.
Right. He's listening to our dumbasses.
Yeah, so he can probably listen and see all the things we screwed up,
or all shit chatting it up,
all the things we got wrong about his album. But either way, it proves that, you know, there is a purpose for Twitter. You know, we resisted as long as we could.
Yeah, anyone who's been listening to this for at least a good 3 or 4 months knows that we've been dragging our feet.
Yeah,
on the social meds, just because it's just. It's not something I want to do.
Right, right.
I still don't want to
do it. But I think in the last 2 weeks, we've been somewhat active on it, and it's proven how useful it is, like, over and over again. We had a really cool interaction, and this guy actually filled out our comment form on the website, nofillerpodcast.com. But he reached out to us and said, hey, guys, I sent you a long email, and, you know, we read the email. It was one of the coolest things we've ever read. We then posted that on Twitter, his story that he told about the undoing of David Wright, which is a really obscure band from Denton that we did a bonus Halloween episode on last year.
Yeah, the last band we thought that we would ever hear from someone, you know, who, especially someone who knows, who had an experience with the band.
Well, and somebody who was not from Denton. That was made it so cool. Like, where was he from again?
Greenville, Kentucky. At the time, that's where he was living.
So they were doing some probably tiny ass tour. They were going on tour. They paid them to come, right?
Yep. Yeah, dude, the whole story is on Twitter, you know? So yeah, hop right. on our Twitter handles, No Filler Podcast. Hop on there and give it a read. It's pretty great.
That's what we've always wanted out of this podcast, was to open up some sort of a channel of communication between people who listen and us. tell us what we get wrong. Tell us what you love. You know,
yeah,
we had somebody tweet me a few times and enlightened us on some things that we got wrong on our Kid A and our Amnesiac episodes on Radiohead. And hey, that's great. I love it. Tell me when I'm wrong, please. Because, you know, that's what it's all about. It's all about, you know, learning more about these bands and albums and, you know, geeking out together with our listeners. So
that's what this is all about.
Anyway, so now let's get around to business here. To continue our electronic batch of episodes here, we're going to talk about an artist that one could make the argument, Q, that they're not an electronic band.
Well, I'm going to make that argument. I'm going to stop you there, son.
But it opens up an interesting conversation about what is electronic music, right?
Yes, and that's where we're going to dive right into that here. So now, last week we covered Architect for our sidetrack on Comptures. And what made him different about just the typical, you know, outrun synthwave kind of artist is that he integrates samples and loops from actual instruments.
That actually brings up a good point, Q. It's time for a segment that we should probably do more of called Set the Record Straight. When we were discussing all the samples and stuff that he pulled in, and like wondering whether it was him who was laying down the drums and like the wind instruments and whatnot. All of that information, Q, was available to me just a click away on the record label website. So, oops. Sometimes I rely too much on like discogs.com or Wikipedia to tell me what's what. But anyway, yeah. So we our assumption was right. It was an actual drummer. The guy's name is Jerome Chernian. I can't. There's no way I can. There's a silent T in that name. So, Chernian. He lays the drums down on just about every track on the record, including one of the tracks that we talked about, not both of them. And then there is an actual saxophone player that shows up. He did the clarinet on Odyssey, which is one of the tracks we talked about, and. And then it's got the two vocalists mentioned here as well. But yeah, actual strings were arranged by somebody. So like, yeah, this guy had, I mean, there was an actual violinist, an actual cello on this record. So yeah. Okay,
so, but here's the deal. Here's what makes, and I am going to assume again here, but here's what makes it still an electronic artist. Yes, you've got an actual drummer and a saxophone player. But my guess is that Architect is, you know, he might have them lay down the drum beats in studio, but my guess is he will take those recordings and either loop the drum beat, you know, or splice up and play around with the saxophone recordings and then put that into his music.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. I mean, we even talked about that. How, like, you know, he manipulated that bass line and stuff like that. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, no
and doubt. That's what makes it an electronic artist to me, is because Architect could take this music on the road with him, and he doesn't need a drummer and he doesn't need a saxophone player.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah. So, I mean, that's what I want to talk about with Kiln. So, yeah, today.
Yeah.
We're finally going to mention the name of the artist that we're actually covering, which is good because I think it kind of spills into this band, and we can talk about it.
Yeah.
Based, you know, spinning off of this conversation about live instruments and stuff. They're called Kiln. KILN, sort of like the thing that you put your third grade ceramics project into the oven, you know, and let it bake or whatever. And these guys are a trio.
It's three guys. Kevin Hayes, who plays drums, and he also does sampling. Kirk Marison, who plays guitar. Effect loops and keyboard, and Clark Viberg, who also plays guitar, and he messes around with loop pedals and stuff like that. So they've been making music as far back as mid-90s. Before they were Kiln, they went by Fiberforms, and they were mostly an acoustic instrumental band at the time, but they did still kind of mess around with like looped percussion instruments and, you know, effect pedals and stuff like that. But it's not the kind of music that they would later go on to do as Kiln. So you can actually find their music. It was kind of like a huge compilation album that this record label put together of their old stuff that they used to do before they became Kiln. So this is their Fiberforms music. This is more an actual acoustic, you know, instrumental band. They've got this album called Tree Drums that was released back in 96. So this is kind of like unearthed material kind of stuff that they were doing way back in the day. So here's my favorite from this album. This is track 4. It is called Untitled Bright Format.
Yeah, I mean, that's jazzy, you know?
This kind of reminds me...
I also got a hint of 311. I'm just going to put that out there. But it's probably the drums, too, with the you know, he had the snare a little bit
It's almost like a piccolo.
Yeah.
Super high-pitched snare.
Yeah.
This, to me, is very similar to kind of that math rock instrumental stuff, like the Mercury Program, that band that we covered. You know, this is just an instrumental band, you know?
Sure, yeah.
This is not Kiln, and I'm excited to jump ahead to what they later do as Kiln.
Well, it's not Kiln, but there is just, like, you can hear the it makes sense that this is the origin of Kiln.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And it's the same three guys.
You can still hear it. Yeah, yeah. That's cool. these guys are truly unique in my opinion. Like they, there's just something about their music that makes it, it's, and we've used this word before, like there's a warmth to it, you know? And that's probably because, you know, these are real instruments that you're hearing. So there's that acoustic, organic, like element to it. You know, the funny thing is it's, they're doing so much to it, like the manipulation and stuff, but it doesn't sound like overly processed or anything like that. You know what I mean?
It sounds very organic.
Yeah, it sounds very organic, but it is, it's very much, you know, not like, like you're saying, you listed off, you listed off Kevin Hayes as sampling and Kirk Morrison as effect loops. And Clark Rehberg is also listed, but treated guitar. I think that's interesting that they list it as treated guitar.
Yeah.
That, you know, that means like, you know, they're using various objects and stuff like between the instrument strings to get a different sound. You know what I mean? So like they're very much experimenting. They're doing a bunch of stuff to that guitar to make it sound a certain way, which is interesting that, you know.
Yeah.
But again, it's like, it's kind of like, you know, how I've talked about like this, the guitar, they're choosing to make, to get these sounds out of a guitar versus just getting it from a keyboard or something like that. You know what I mean? They're like, let's use the guitar as this, as the main instrument. Like all the sounds you're hearing are coming out of guitar, but we're going to get the sound out of it in, you know, unconventional ways or whatever, which is really cool. So do we know anything about what made them decide to change the name? Like, is it because they were going in the, in that different direction with it? And that's why, like, I wonder what made them think, hey, you know what, let's start to treat and sample this stuff and go down a more like electronic path with this music, you know?
I only found one interview with these guys. So this was an interview that was done back in 2008. So this is a few years into them being, you know, I mean, this is actually 10 years into them being Kiln. But the interviewer asks why they don't ever perform live. So that's something that about these guys, they don't perform live as a three piece. They've never performed live. And basically the interviewer was trying to get, you know, why is this? Is there a reason why you guys don't perform live? Basically he's saying, you know, it's kind of a necessity. It's just kind of how it is now for us. We just don't have the time to perform live for one. You know, it's just kind of, we all have real jobs, you know, we have careers, and basically we just have enough time nowadays to just kind of work on new tracks and send each other ideas remotely, you know. But he said actually back in the mid 90s, the three of us actually set up several studio houses where we lived and breathed music, playing, listening, and recording. We all had shitty jobs and were trying to put everything towards making something solid. During that period, we performed a handful of live gigs in different settings to various sized audiences. In late 1997, we reconvened after a year and a half break and were so focused on getting things done that we never mustered the energy to put together another show. Ultimately, the recorded works are what will last, and that is what we put everything towards.
So is that still how they do it to this day? It's all remotely?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
No, well, not remotely. I don't know about that for sure. But like that's the thing.
I've heard of bands that do that. Like the singer, like the main songwriter will have like his or her demo tape of ideas, you know, that they record, and they send it out to their band members like before they get into the studio so that everybody can kind of start to, you know, brainstorm and think about these songs, you know what I mean? But it sounds like that's how they do it. And possibly that's how they piece together the record too.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, you can do it that way. That's the thing. You can totally do it that way, especially with the way that they do it.
Yeah. So it sounds to me like basically saying, you know, by the late 90s, you know, into the 2000s, they got to the point that they realized, okay, what we have recorded is what will last forever.
Sure.
And that's all that matters. Let's put all of our energy into that moving forward. Another thing too, I'm reading here. Yes, they do have careers outside of Kiln. They do all live in the same state, but they live hours apart from each other. So they're not all in the same city or town. So yeah, they are kind of doing it remotely. My guess is that's probably how it progressed for them, going from a more like actual instrumental three-piece band to evolving into this, you know, organic electronic kind of music that they do now. You know, with them living hours apart and focusing just on the music, you know, they started to incorporate field recordings, you know, a lot of like stuff that they pick up, you know, like when you listen to a Kiln song, it almost sounds like you're walking through like a rainforest, you know, or like walking through, you know,
definitely.
There's something about, and that's, that to me, it, like some of my favorite electronic quote unquote artists incorporate field recordings into their music, and they create these like soundscapes with their techniques and how they record and mix things, you know, in their recordings.
Yeah. Well, we talked about Lossl. Lossl did that too.
Yeah.
And we've covered Amon Tobin.
Yeah.
Although the album that we covered, he didn't do that, but he did an entire album where he took field recordings. Like he would record sounds from like around the city and stuff, and he would sample it in.
Yeah. And like, you know, when you're doing it electronically, or you, if you're more on the producing end of things where you're not worrying about how to pull it off live, you know, you can start to, kind of tweak and manipulate the recordings that you have, you know, especially with field recordings, and maybe like add an effect to it or loop it in a way and throw it in the background and, you know, mix it down in a certain way that like, it's almost, I'm going to quote someone here, before we actually get into the meat of what makes Kiln so amazing. There's a slightly hallucinogenic quality to Kiln's sound. Sometimes it's as if they're heard through ears situated just under the surface of water.
Yeah, man. Totally. And totally.
Listen to this. This person goes, "Is that the flittering of a dragonfly that I hear?" You know, stuff like that. Yeah. Like it almost sounds like you're hearing like insects chirping and wings flapping and stuff.
Right.
I don't think anyone does it as well as Kiln does.
Yes. So yeah, that's what we were talking about earlier. They are super unique in that regard. Like,
yeah,
the way the sounds that they get are just like, they sound or so organic and like natural sounding.
Yeah. You know? And I think what they started to do here moving forward, you know, a few years into them making music together as a three piece, I think what they did, and again, it's really hard to tell because of how well they do this, but it seems like they started to take these little guitar lines, you know, and they would loop them and then layer on top of it. And, you know, we talk about this all the time with electronic music, and what we love about it is how, if it's done correctly, there's all these really pretty and subtle layers that are built on top of each other and taken away. And then like, you know, it's just like, it just evolves throughout the song. That's what these guys do amazingly. Okay. So you heard them as an instrumental band. I'm going to jump ahead to 2004. My favorite album of theirs, or EP, this is called Sunbox, came out in 2004. There's 5 tracks on this album. There's 2 songs I want to play from this. First one's track 4 on the record. We're going to do 2 clips from this. This might be my favorite Kiln song. So this track is called Hong. Thank you.
I just love it.
It gives me chills, man.
Such a good song. Yeah. I love the bass sound that they're getting. It's got to be an actual bass player, obviously.
That's not obvious, dude. I mean,
yeah, that could be a keyboard. But I saw that they listed a session bass player on their Wikipedia player.
Yeah.
So yeah, that could be him laying down that track. But yeah, such a stark difference from what they were doing
as Five Reforms.
But what I like about this is, like, I think it's clear that this is electronic, right? Like, now, like we were saying, like, you know, they're kind of unique in that, you know, they're not, they don't fall under like the stereotypical electronic sound where it's like you hear it and it's clear and obvious that it's electronic music, you know what I mean? But that song is definitely electronic music. All right, Q, so I'm glad that you're going to split this into two clips, and I'm glad that you stopped it when you did, because I would say that, like, there's a part in this next clip you're going to play that's like one of my favorite Kiln moments. There's something about, and they've done this, they do this a few times, like, they're really good at this, at like giving you this, like, I don't know, this like moment, this release almost, you know. It's kind of going back to the layering that we talked about earlier, but like,
yeah,
they're really effective at it. And so you'll hear what we're talking about when we play the clip here. But yeah, let's listen to that second clip, Q. And again, the song is called Hong.
And we should have said this at the beginning, dude. If you have a chance to grab some earphones, or if you're sitting in your car listening to this and you've got a really nice sound system at home, you should probably wait and listen to this music properly, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Like,
listening to this stuff in headphones is just... it's just something else. All right, here's clip two from Hong. So I'm just going to read some things that other people have said, you know, that are able to put words together a little bit more eloquently than we do. Kiln construct radiantly textured sound fields that envelop and immerse the listener in a panoramic smudge of chromatic rhythms and syncopated tones. A ravishing...
I like the word texture. Oh, you're still gone?
A ravishing and stimulating feast for the ears. Like sunshine during a rain shower. I mean...
yeah. I mean, I like his the use of the word textures, because we were talking about, yeah, like, earlier.
And sound fields.
Yeah. It sounds like tangible, you know?
Yeah. Oh, you know what, dude? I'm going to read the rest of the quote from earlier. I was talking about that guy that said there's like a, there's a hallucinogenic quality to Kiln Sound.
Yeah.
At other times, it's like when you're somewhere so bakingly hot that it has an effect on acoustics, similar to the visual wavering of the middle distance. Like if you're looking off in the horizon, it's like, you know, it looks like it's a wave, you know, because it's so goddamn hot. You're looking off at the horizon and it's like warbly, you know?
Yes.
It's a, that's a good way to describe it. Like it,
yeah.
It is hard it,
it's,
to...
Yeah, no, that's good because it's like...
It's almost like an oasis kind
of... Yeah, you yeah. know? You don't really think of music doing that. But yeah, they that's kind of what it's like. It's like you're putting their it through a filter and you know, it's it comes out the other end like, you know, altered in some way. But yeah, that moment, like we talk about, so it's not really silence, but there's that like that quietness that happens for a really good stretch. They hold it out for a while.
It's more just ambient, then, like background noise.
Yeah, but they're holding that moment, yeah. And then the guitar comes back in.
Mm-hmm. And it's a whole different, it's very different than the beginning of the song.
Yeah, and it's very much just a untreated guitar sound that sounds more like that first clip that you played. Where it's just almost like a jazzy kind of guitar tone, you know?
Yeah.
But that's what's great about this band is that this is a group of musicians that were making more traditional sounding jazz, almost post rock kind of sound, and then they're taking that, you know, and moving it into the electronic realm. So it's not like you know, somebody like Com Trues. Nothing against him, but like if you don't approach music like a traditional band, then you're not going to approach your electronic music the same way that they would, right? Does that make sense?
Like, no, yeah, no. So
that's what makes them unique.
So thinking back to bands that are more ambient but electronic that we've covered before, Tycho, Lossal.
Well, shit, man. Let's talk about Radiohead. You think about how they went from, you know, the Bends and stuff into OK Computer and then especially into Amnesiac. They went from a traditional rock, alt-rock band to, hey, we're getting bored of the standard approach to a rock song. At least Tom York was getting bored with it. And then they started doing electronic stuff, right? So they were a rock band that shifted and started doing electronic type music, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's what made it so unique is that...
Well, and to your point, like, it's a group of musicians versus one person that is producing electronic music, like Tycho or Lossal or Com Trues or Architect. Sure, they might pull in other musicians from time to time to help them make the music that they want, but it's just one person making and producing music versus Radiohead or Kiln, where it's a group of people making music. It's totally different, and it definitely shows in this music.
I think with Kiln, it's like they approach their songwriting just like they would write a more traditional rock song, if you will.
Well, so going back to that,
manipulated.
Going back to the interview from 2008, another question's asked, do all three of you work together or do you come together with individually created sections and then work on assembling them into holes? So the next album in line is called Dusker. Very similar to what we're hearing here on Sunbox, but they say, you know, we wanted to focus on Kevin's growing archive of MPC beats. MPC is that, it stands for Music Production Center, kind of like those, you know, beat pads that you can buy, you know, and sample through a program and all that stuff. So we wanted to focus more on these beats that he's created as a basis for this new material. So he says most of the discs or the tracks... began their lives as a layered groove on Kevin's MPC. We spend a great deal of time on rhythms, getting them to that mystic point of balance between clean density and lush heaviness. Later, we typically record, quote, live instances of shakers or other percussive elements to take the groove even further.
Yeah.
Another quick question, then we'll go to the next track here. They ask, do you have a digital vault where you're constantly stockpiling bits and pieces that you constantly return to for inspiration? They say, individually as a unit, we've done a lot of recording and the majority of it is unreleased. Most of it predates our work as Kiln, and much of it still strikes me as fuel for modern translation.
So they potentially have like albums and albums worth of different pieces here and there that could come together. It makes you wonder why they don't put out more albums, but
yeah,
obviously, like, you know, they put a lot of thought into it.
Yeah. He says we consider those, cassettes kind of like recording sketchbooks full of drafts and experiments. And we cull from them when the mood hits.
Yeah. That's cool.
So yeah, really cool. All right. I wanted to play another song from Sunbox. This is the last song on the record. And this song begs for headphones. It just tickles your eardrums, dude. It's hard to describe, but the way they pull this sound off, it's just something else, man. All right, so this song is called Season.
Yeah, man, it's like it's whispering in your ear, you know.
Yes, dude, that's that little tickle, like a,
yeah. I mean, what's that word that people? There's a thing. There's a whole thing with that.
What is it, ASPR, ASMR, right?
ASMR, yeah.
Yeah, dude.
It's got that same
effect, yeah.
That same effect that people enjoy listening to those ASMR videos for. It gives you goosebumps in the way that music sometimes does, but in a way that's like through the ASMR type thing where it's like, I don't know, there's just something. And like you said, it's like that really like high pitched percussive sound that's going on throughout the whole thing, that kind of mm-hmm. clicking thing mm-hmm. that they do a lot of.
Yeah.
And then there's that really subtle ghostly kind of sound, I guess. I don't know. To name drop the record label, Ghostly, unintentionally. Man, we've covered a lot of Ghostly International the last couple weeks, because Com Truz was also on Ghostly International. But
Tycho and Lossell, they're all on Ghostly.
Lossell's on Ghostly?
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, man. That's a fucking magical song, man.
Yeah.
There's something about that.
Yeah, dude.
And like you said, if you're not listening to that with headphones, give it another listen.
It's otherworldly, dude. It's
yes,
the
it
only
really
way to
is,
describe
man.
Kiln's music.
Yeah,
I'm gonna read one more quote here from another publication. Kiln's music is a hi-fi tapestry of granular synthesis and rich computer-enhanced bursts of chords, blurring the lines between sound design and composition through the use of refracted electronics and bits of live instrumentation. So you really don't know what's live and what's, you know, computer enhanced. They're just masters at it.
Right. Yeah. No, yeah. There really is no other group like him.
Yeah.
If you like this record, I mean, if you like what you heard from this episode, at least, I would encourage you to go back and listen to our Lossell episode. That was early on, but it's a similar kind of thing.
Worthy of headphones.
Yeah. A little bit more ambient, but...
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So that's it, man. That's our coverage of Kiln. We really only focused on Sunbox, but they got a few other really good, longer playing records. Dusker's probably the best one, I think. I mean, Sunbox is my favorite, yeah. But Dusker's just an unbelievable record as well, which came out a few years later in 2007. So that's Kiln. Next week, I want to cover an artist that goes by Hiatus. And like I've mentioned before, my absolute favorite electronic music is heavily sampled recordings that are pieced together to make new music. And Hiatus, I want to say, is kind of similar in that, you know, a lot of what you're hearing is probably recorded for those sessions, you know, but everything's heavily looped samples, and his music is just so beautiful.
Yeah. And he's got a really great vocalist
on this album, at least. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to find out what her name is. But yeah, that's going to be our sidetrack for next week, is an artist that goes by Hiatus. It's what you heard time, brother.
Yeah, man. Okay. I'll go first. So it's no secret at this point. I think I've mentioned this several times throughout the podcast, but I'm a sucker for video game soundtracks. More often than not, it's a video game that I've never even played. I just like video game scores. And I stumbled upon this website. It's kind of like a database, if you will, of, you know what, it's not even that. It's a MP3. I mean, when you see it, it's so old school the way the site looks. But people have gone on and uploaded the soundtrack from a game that they literally ripped it out of the game, right? They went into the files on the computer and grabbed the scores and put it online. I mean, you can find a lot of these on Spotify, but there's a lot of games on this website that you can't find on Spotify. And I was happy to see that they had the Silent Hill franchise on there, because Spotify used to have almost all of their scores and they took them off, and they only have a few now. And I used to love listening to the Silent Hill soundtrack, because more so than anything, kind of like Amon Tobin, you know, Amon Tobin did the Splinter Cell soundtrack. This music is electronic in like a down-tempo sense a lot of times, but the composer, and his name is Akira Yamaoka, he would incorporate guitars and drums like into the music. And like standalone, if you didn't know that it was a score to like a survival horror game, like this stuff is really, really good. And that's what I like about video game scores is that a lot of times it's not like you're listening to fucking the Mario Brothers. You know what I mean? Like yeah. this is like some of the best composers now do stuff for video games. You know, like video games have become such a mega industry that video game scores sound like movie scores nowadays, right? But anyway, so I'm going to play a track off of Silent Hill 2. Came out in 2001. And I'm just curious to get your opinion, Q, when we come back. So, Q, I'm going to send you a link here. So this song is called The Reverse Will.
I love that kind of stuff, man.
Fucking great.
Yeah, dude, I love that kind of like heavily, you know, sampled jazz music.
You like the piano and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
Well, I mean, to me, I thought the reason I chose this song, I mean, it is a horror game, so a lot of it is dark, ambient, you know, scary sounding music. But that track in particular, like I've never played the game, so I don't know what is happening. Like what scene is happening? I would imagine that's during a cutscene, probably. But anyway, I thought the guitar almost had a shoegaze sound to it, like a shoegaze guitar sound to it.
A little bit, yeah.
And you know, this was 2001, and so you heard that kind of like the DJ kind of scratching kind of effect that he put on there. I mean, you think about what was happening in rock and roll in the early 2000s. It was the new rap stuff. You know what I mean? New metal stuff. Right.
Yeah, and like Fatboy Slim and
Moby. You know, and just like, you know, Incubus and stuff like that was
and Linkin Park, man, let's not forget
right
that.
Exactly. So like
yeah,
it's no surprise that he was incorporating that kind of thing into it, because that's what was happening with rock music at the time. But anyway, that's what I'm a sucker for. It's like if you are somebody who doesn't play video games, you may never hear this song ever, right?
Right.
You know, for me, I might not play the video game, but I've listened to enough video game scores to know that some really, really great music is on video game scores, and you're never going to hear it unless you either dig into it like I do or you play the actual game, right? So anyway, like my favorite Amon Tobin record is his score for Splinter Cell, Chaos Theory. Anyway, so yeah, that's that, man. I've been geeking out on this website the last few days. There's a bunch of scores that I haven't heard in a long time. There's also Shinobi 3 Q, which we covered last week as our outro song. I thought that you could only find it on YouTube. I was wrong. You can find it on this website too. So anyway, it's downloads www.khinsider.com. Hmm. And like I said, if you go to it, like the whoever set this up, they haven't updated it since they created it. Like that's,
well, maybe it's on some obscure server, you know, overseas.
Maybe. Maybe. Because I, you know, some of it you'll go to a record and it'll be like removed for copyright and stuff like that. Yeah. So yeah. It is kind of sketchy, but you can, if you own the video game, you can like on the computer, you can go into the, like the older games, you could go into the files, like browse your folders and stuff, and then find the actual MP3s back in the day. Maybe we'll post this in the show notes. So if you're somebody who likes to listen to old video game scores, check out this website. They got a pretty good selection. Anyway, all right, Q, what do you got for us? What you been hurting lately?
Have you heard of a guy named Moses Sumney?
I don't think so.
He's under the electro soul folk category. It's kind of hard to describe his music. I heard one of his songs on the radio the other day. I don't know. I don't know how to describe his music, dude. He kind of reminds me of kind of like how I imagine Prince. You know, if Prince was making music today, or you know, someone of that level of skill. I mean, this guy. Let's just say I'm excited to hear more from this guy.
Would you kind of compare him to,
like maybe Blood Orange or something okay. like that. Yeah. Really, really unique stuff. I've never heard anything like this before. So he's only got a handful of songs that are out right now, and he is about to release a full length album, I believe. So this is one of the singles that he's released. This song is called Viral.
Like that, yeah, very, like you said, very soulful,
yeah, different,
yeah. I like that, man. You know, I want more music like this to be made, you know what I mean?
Yeah dude, I'm excited.
It's a throwback sound, but definitely modern at the same time.
I'm really excited to hear what else he's got for us, man. Yeah, so yeah, that's Moses Sumney. That's a song called, it's either Viral or viral. Like virility, it's not viral, V-I-R-A-L. It's, anyways, dude, that's what we do around here. We mispronounce things left and right.
We mispronounce things. We misspell. We have Freudian slips in our tweets that get picked up by the artist. It's just, you know, it's part of the brand.
It's part of the brand, unfortunately.
Couple of fuck ups.
All right, so that's going to do it for us today. As always, hop onto our website, nofillerpodcast.com. There you can read our show notes and check out the track lists for each episode. You can stream our episodes on pretty much anywhere you find your podcasts. We are part of the Pantheon Podcast Network. We are lucky enough to be alongside a lot of really, really great music-centered podcasts.
A lot of music-centered podcasts that would never mispronounce a name like we do.
We don't know that.
That's true. I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt.
Okay, yeah, yeah. So you can find us there on pantheonpodcasts.com. And again, we're going to be shouting at you again next week with a band, or not a band, really, with an artist that goes by Hiatus. And that may or may not be wrapping up our electronic stint. I'm guessing not. We'll probably cover a few more electronic artists into the month of March.
Yeah, I think we need to, man. We need to cover more ground here.
Okay. And hey, sure. if you've got an artist in mind, or you know a style of electronic music that you think we need to cover, tweet us or send us an email. You can find, we've got a contact form on our website. You know, you can contact us through there. You can actually send us an email directly, nofillerpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know if there's an artist you'd like us to cover, you know, under the electronic vein. And so for our outro today, Trav, have you heard of a band called People Press Play?
Oh, fuck yeah, dude.
Yeah, dude. I love...
They were on a documentary that I watched.
Really?
I think called Press Play. I might be thinking of something else, dude. I might actually be thinking of the name of a documentary.
Well, this is a band that I found...
Oh, I do remember this record.
Yeah, dude. This is back in our...
I gotta cue this up,
back
bro.
Hang on now. Back in our New Dust days, yeah. I don't remember how I came across these guys, but... Yeah, so the reason I'm playing them today is because, you know, this is just one of those happy musical moments. I was, you know, scrolling down to the end of that interview of Kiln, and, you know, a lot of people like to wrap up interviews with... any, you know, what's a current favorite artist or whatever. And sure enough, the guys from Kiln are huge fans of this group. This is a three-piece band, and I'm going to read just a little bit about them here from one of the Kiln guys. It says, these are all quality musicians, you know, either together or as a solo. And I would also say that they are totally underappreciated for how great they are. The self-titled People Press Play record that came out last year, and this came out in 2007, should have been a huge international hit in the electronic fringe pop category. A masterpiece in its own right, with very clean structures and lovely vocals. I love this album, and it's one that I haven't really gone back to in a while. So,
yeah, I haven't heard this since probably we covered it on No Filler.
On New Dust, friend.
Shit, on New Dust.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I remember this cover. It's a big time.
Yeah.
Big time.
Yeah. It's a really great blend of, you know, electronic instrumental tracks with really pretty you know, more you know, song like verse, chorus, actual songs with pretty lyrics and vocals as well. You know, there's equal parts of that throughout the record. So again, this is an album. This is a self-titled record from People Press Play. Came out in 2007. And the song we're going to outro us out with is a song called That Walk. And that's going to do it for us today. Thank you, as always, for listening. My name is Quentin.
And my name is Travis.
Y'all take care.
Hey, this is Brad Page from the I'm in Love with That Song podcast, inviting you to join me as we explore a different song each episode, discovering what makes these songs great. The performances, arrangements, and the production tricks and techniques are all part of creating those magic moments that turn a good song into a great one. On this podcast, we take a deep dive into each song, listening to all those nuances that came together to make it a great song. Our journey takes us across the musical map, from the Beatles and the Stones to Aretha Franklin and Tom Petty, Kiss, the Cars, Todd Rundgren and Roxy Music, from Badfinger to Al Green, Stevie Wonder to David Bowie, from Aerosmith to the Zombies. We listen to it all on the I'm in Love with That Song podcast. You may be unfamiliar with some of these songs, and some of them you've probably heard 100 times, but I bet if we listen closely, we can discover something new. So join me on the I'm in Love with That Song podcast, and let's listen together, because I think you're going to love these songs too.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.